Okay, we are set. Hello, folks, and especially insiders. Welcome back to the QS Cast. We are joined by Sean Johnson, owner of Brute Force Games. So, Sean, I really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I hope I can answer some questions for some people about Amazon and anything else they might be curious about.
Yeah. We definitely wanted to go over the, well, as WotC put it on their website, this experimentation announcement, their partnership with Amazon, and how that works. And, you know, I think, you know, Sean, you've been an awesome contributor to the QS Insider Discord. Everyone really kind of values your opinions. I, for one, always, know that you kind of have this level-headed approach. And I think your input would be very valuable to us. So we, again, thank you so much for providing that to us here.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's just kind of go a more meta approach. So they announced this back on September 21st. You know, there was a lot of jargon. There was a lot of kind of corporate loaded, you know, we're not abandoning LGSs. We're kind of trying this out. We want to kind of, you know, experiment with this and maybe, you know, kind of grow the awareness. I'm sure they kind of framed it. Well, they did frame it like that. So let's just kind of maybe go back to September 21st. You know, you're at your business. What was your kind of first initial take to this?
So my first thought was I've never really understood why they waited this long to kind of jump into the market with everybody else. Cheap boxes are not a new thing. So WotC jumping in the arena just creates another competitor. I don't think it really changes much else than that.
Okay, so that's definitely a take that is in stark contrast to what we've been hearing. But, you know, especially around here, we like to kind of weed through the very kind of outcry and emotional take here, because I mean, it does make, you know, it does kind of come across that way. And obviously it's a reaction to have, but you know, as we peel kind of back the layers here, that was kind of my initial thought too, is, I mean, what is this? I mean, like you exactly kind of put it, cheap boxes have always been kind of a thing, even as far back as I can remember, even when I bought boxes or used to buy boxes like years ago. You know, people were always trying to find a deal, even from LGSs, whether it be, you know, buying cases or just trying to find the best deal if there was multiple LGSs even in the same area. So in terms of that, I mean, do you feel that that kind of segment of your business model is going to be affected all too much? Or do you kind of still believe that, you know, Or let's just kind of frame it like this. Or do you feel that it may actually help you in terms of maybe, you know, there's more kind of visibility to the actual product itself? And then, you know, folks will just kind of, you know, maybe that have not played Magic before may not still want to buy from Amazon and they still want to maybe come to an LGS.
Yeah, I think that's been proven over time. So Star City Games and all the other big online vendors, they've had, you know, $90 boxes for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
We sell boxes for $105 plus tax, and no one really asks us to match that $15 difference. Occasionally we'll get a person who asks, we politely say no, and, you know, just kind of phrase it in the way that, you know, we have different overheads than they do. We unfortunately can't price match that. We would still appreciate it if you did support us and, you know, paid that extra $15. And almost always people are fine with that. I think there is a threshold of tolerance at a point where people won't pay a certain amount. So, for instance, if I have a box for $150 and I try to do that same, you know, support your LGS pitch, that's not going to work the same because the gap between those two prices is just too far at that point.
Yeah. And that's kind of like what, and that's a kind of exactly kind of where I was going with this. I mean, you know, do you feel like, so maybe we kind of narrow it down. You kind of had your input back when, and this is kind of going back. So we're just kind of trying to have this in a context now. They made the announcement that they were going to have the buy a box promo. Then they turn, you know, and that was great. I remember you specifically kind of talking, you know, amongst us insiders here that you were kind of very happy about that. And, you know, why shouldn't you be? That's a great kind of, you know, step forward. In addition to the kind of early bird, you could kind of sell them before the official street date, kind of that promotion. But then they kind of closed down they kind of changed the Wizards Direct. So do you feel like this, you know, as a store owner, just to kind of refresh my memory, how long have you been in business?
So I've been in business since 2008, but I've only been a brick and mortar since about 2013. I was largely online for a number of years.
Right. Do you feel that this is maybe enough, you know, now that kind of we're compounding these announcements, has this altered your perception of do I need to go a different direction of brick and mortar? Or, you know, I'm assuming your LGS is like a lot of LGSs that myself and other, you know, players have entered. I mean, all the LGSs I have been into over the course of my lifetime, I mean, they're not strictly only selling Magic the Gathering. So is this just, you know, status quo here in terms of Magic the Gathering? It's one kind of revenue stream in your store and you will still support that? Or do you feel that maybe these announcements are kind of too much of a negative and they're outweighing the positive of, you know, the other announcements of, you know, the buy a box promo, which you can still only get from LGSs and not Amazon, by the way, from what I read, I believe that's true. So you can correct me on that.
Yes.
And kind of early bird stuff.
So the process for getting a buy a box promo is you have to come in and pick up the card.
Yep.
And the box. So they're very strict about that. Even if you say, let's say came into my store, bought a box, we're guaranteed a promo, and then you moved, you know, out of state, technically under WotC's policy, I would not be able to ship you that box. So there is that early bird. You have to come to your LGS if you want, you know, early access to the product as well as a buy a box promo. So I think they've put up these very strict rules in order to make sure that online vendors aren't just shipping, you know, the promos all over the place, even though there are going to be a small fraction of sellers who don't give out the product and they just keep it. I mean, Nexus of Fate is kind of one of those double-edged swords where you want a really good promo to be able to drive sales of booster boxes to your customers. But at the same time, you know that there's going to be a large number of sellers who see a $20 card and you've just given them a stack of 60 of them and they're just not going to give them out.
Yeah, and I've seen it happen. I mean, I've seen it happen. I'm sure other players seen it happen. So, I mean, I don't understand. Like, so is this, you know, and I always kind of like to take a step back. And obviously, you know, as always, you kind of are having this level-headed kind of take on this. I mean, you know, when a lot of players are, you know, see these announcements and saying you're kind of killing off local gaming stores, you're, you know, and conjecture of, you know, they want to just completely remove it and go to Magic Online. That may be true, but, Magic the Gathering or local gaming stores that sell these card games have been around forever. I mean, as long as I can remember, not really forever, but as long as I can remember, I mean, it's still kind of the pulse of the community. And I can understand that it gets continuously more cutthroat, but I just don't see, I just think there's a lot of overreaction to all of these announcements. Now, I don't have, obviously you would have numbers in front of you to kind of back up your claims, but do you feel that, you know, you're still going, it's not enough for you to kind of reevaluate your business model, but there's still going to be maybe a small percentage of sales that may get eaten up to, you know, Amazon sales and what have you?
I think there'll be a little bit of loss. I don't think it'll be enough to notice because the biggest thing is that boxes in general are not, they don't have great margins to begin with.
Sure.
You know, most stores, if you sell them for 90, you know, you're looking at maybe a handful of dollars profit depending on, you know, if you're offering free shipping or not. You know, we make about $25 per box after everything is said and done. If I sell 100 boxes, you know, that's only 25. What is that? $2,500. That pays for two employees, if that. So
yeah.
Box sales don't generate enough revenue to keep a store afloat. I mean, we have the biggest singles inventory south of LA, so that's our main moneymaker. We just turn over singles day in and day out. We're the biggest buyer in San Diego. So the money has always been in the singles. I've always recognized that. Everything else is ancillary. It just kind of paths the kind of coffers, if you will. And it's important. It's important revenue because we're not only getting it from boxes, we're getting it from deck boxes and other games and things like that. So all of them combined, it kind of makes up a pretty healthy chunk of change. But yeah, if I lose 2% of my total sales because two people go and get boxes elsewhere, it's not really going to change anything at all for me. So
yeah, and so I'm sure you stock other IPs, right, Sean?
Yeah, we stock a few things. Magic is definitely something that I've always wanted to be a specialty store for. And we've definitely proven that. But we do carry some other games. We're looking to kind of expand more into board games and some other offerings here before the new year. So
yeah, because I was going to ask, and you know, I don't primarily deal with sealed product, and I wouldn't, and obviously this is why you're on, because you know, you can kind of confirm this stuff. You have the numbers. I mean, you've been doing this for a good amount of time now. I would have to think, like, you know, even other IPs. I mean, hasn't this always? I mean, haven't other IPs? Let's just take. I don't know if you stock Pokemon TCG.
No, our primary main other game is Final Fantasy. We got in real early on that one, so we kind of captured the community.
Nice.
We do some other stuff, but I mean, it's very small. We have Pokemon packs, things like that, but I don't touch singles.
Right. So let's just kind of leave the singles aside. I mean, it just seemed to me like every other IP, like in terms of card games, like gets stocked on Amazon anyway, and stores still sell it. So I'm just kind of trying to frame my mind around like why the continuous overreaction. Like I understand folks are trying to kind of piece this puzzle together of, well, you know, it's not just one announcement, it's, you know, every announcement. And I just see this over reaction of, well, I'm just going to kind of take my ball and go home kind of thing. We want to switch business models. I mean, that can't just be from one announcement. I mean, can it?
No, I have seen that reaction. I'm part of some, you know, small business groups that cater to gaming. And the overall reaction from a lot of the very small stores is that they do want to move away from Magic. But these are people who their portion of Magic is only, you know, maybe 10 or 20% of their revenue, maybe a little bit more. They do a lot of other Warhammer and other games. So Magic isn't as big of a piece of the pie for them. So they can kind of make these, you know, swingy decisions, dropping a product. And personally, I think it would be very foolish to drop Magic. It's such a liquid product. Even booster packs and booster boxes at a slim margin, the fact remains that you're just going to move them so much more than you'll move, you know, maybe not Gloomhaven. That game was really popular, but, you know, some other board game that's maybe about a year old. You know, you're just not going to see that amount of liquidity with any other game that's, you know, 20 plus years old.
So would you, you know, kind of take that, like, this is kind of, you know, another kind of thought. I don't know if you would agree with me. Do really, like, so when these announcements come up, I mean, who is more affected here? The local gaming store, Sean, or the clubhouses? And you know what I mean? Like, and I used to have this a lot of, I mean, I used to be back in New York, and you can kind of tell the clubhouses and the kind of, you know, I used to call them the armpits almost. The closets, the clubhouses of these players that open up a bar to drink kind of stores. Are those the ones that, you know, you can see that this is more affecting, and rightfully so? Because I never, to me, I mean, short of Neutral Grounds, and I'm sure I'm throwing out a name that's, you know, a very long time ago, I don't really see these local gaming stores, and I'm that's a very key phrase there. You know, they kind of just brush this stuff off. I mean, you know, announcement after announcement, and they capitalize on the buy a box promos and the early bird specials. Like, those to me still feel like those vastly outweigh, hey, we're going to be selling boxes on Amazon. Because, like, what does that honestly do? I mean, sure, like you just said, like, maybe if 5% of your customers end up going to Amazon because they don't want to spend the $15. But think about it this way. I mean, now, maybe if those two announcements, I don't know if your position would change as much without the buy a box promos. Maybe it would be completely different. But now, nowadays, like, you're paying the extra $15, but you're getting the, not only you're getting the product early, but now you're getting a seemingly cool, like, well, and playable at this point, buy a box promo. They might not all be winners, but they are all definitely cards that are worthwhile.
Yeah. So to go to your first point regarding the clubhouses, I do think that they are actually the most impacted because they do have the slimmest margin. You know, they're trying to make $5 a box. When Wizards comes out and says, hey, we're basically going to match clubhouses, there's no real reason to go to Jimmy's Rat Den in like a seedy part of town, because I can do it in my underwear. I can order a box on Amazon from the company who makes the game. So an LGS kind of fosters a community. Clubhouses tend to just be like, oh yeah, this guy has super cheap product, I'm broke, I'm gonna go get a box. Whereas an LGS is like, I'm gonna go to this place, I like everybody here, me and my friends go here. You're willing to pay a little bit more to kind of keep that experience going rather than just a dude with cheap boxes, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I'm sure you played the game over half your life at this point. I mean, I have too.
Yeah, I mean, since 94, I've been playing off and on. Yeah.
I think it was like night or I can't do the math really quick in my head, but I was like 12 years old. So,
yeah, I was about the same. I think it was 9 or 10.
Yeah, I was like, it was 18 years ago. So maybe 2000, 1999. Yeah. And listen, I've seen them, I've been in them, and you know what? Like, I understand, but it's a cutthroat business, right? Like, these stores that were already suffering, and like these clubhouses and these kind of hole in the wall places that, okay, maybe you go for Friday Night Magic, there's like 8 people that show up, the store owner and all their friends kind of get in a half the draft. I mean, I've seen it happen. And that's in stark contrast to like these gaming stores that would have like 30, 40, 50 people show up for a Friday Night Magic, and it's an actual community. I mean, those stores are going to be suffering anyway, right? Like, so, you know, I just kind of think that, you know, the strongest survive, and this is, at the end of the day, we're in, you know, the kind of the United States, and that is kind of like the bottom line. And, you know, sure, Magic in terms of paper is going to be kind of competing. Magic is kind of going into this digital realm, but I mean, is it such a bad thing that really kind of only the stronger stores survive? I mean, isn't that the kind of the whole point?
From a professional standpoint, I don't think so. I think having a brand from like a brand standpoint, you want people, when they think of your brand, they go into a clean store and they have a good time. What you don't want is for people to go in and they're checking out a store because they're interested in Magic, and there's lights out and it smells funky and it's weird and people are, you know, staring at you. And that, to me, that's kind of not the environment that any company would ever really want. So, yeah, I think there is a little bit of a desire to kind of weed out the sort of, I mean, that when I think of a clubhouse, that's what I think of just based on all the ones that I've seen. And you've probably seen as well. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that was necessarily their intent. I think their intent was to make money and jump into the arena with everybody else selling cheap boxes. I just think that that's probably going to be a residual effect of them getting into Amazon, is that some of these real smaller stores, the fly-by-night mom-and-pop stuff, that they don't really have a good business structure.
Yeah, or like Joe's like sports and cards, you know, whatever.
If Magic was their mainstay, and, you know, and now they're going to get hit a little harder, maybe they don't survive. And I've seen that in the local community out here and the surrounding areas. And, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but, I mean, it's kind of part of the business. If you don't do a good job, I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to go under. So eventually something's going to come along, it's going to knock you out, and you're not going to be able to recover. And that's the main difference between a strong store and a store that doesn't really know what it's doing.
I think you hit on a really good point there, and I want to kind of expand on that and kind of pick your brain further. You did mention, like, this is primarily driven by branding. And I think that's a really interesting point of, do you feel that they've obviously, you know, it's Hasbro, and, you know, people can bash Watsy and they do make some boneheaded decisions, but ultimately I think as stewards of the game, they've done an overall pretty good job. I mean, the game is still around.
I think so. They've done an excellent job supporting the LGS and the players. I mean, they give an insurmountable amount of prize support marketing materials. A lot of these things I don't think the players really see, but every 3 months I get, you know, 1 to 2 huge packages from WotC, and it's marketing material and it's free welcome decks that, you know, that cost real money to print those things.
Yeah.
And it's promotional cards and FNM promos and draft weekend promos and all these things. And I think about all the other games that I've tried to, you know, get into, and I can't think of another game that offers this level of price support. So,
So just to kind of continue my point, do you feel it would be, you know, and I'm sure there would be a large percentage, you know, to kind of go back onto this branding thing. You're absolutely right. Like, they want to see Magic, like, in this kind of, they're kind of fostering, like you just said, they want these, the Cool Stuff Inc., the Star City Games, the big, like, your store. Like, they want to see these communities, these actual local gaming stores. That's kind of where, and the destination they want folks to engage with Magic, to see Magic, you know, be a part of this community. Do you think it's still kind of bad, you know, in term, you know, bad looks or bad in terms of, you know, what they're doing as an overall negative to kind of continue pushing that? Like, do you think, I'm sure they've weighed the risk versus reward of making sure these LGSs get, you know, continuously more cutthroat to the point where it's like they're, the LGSs are their kind of vision of where, you know, when they go and play Paper Magic, this is where they want folks to play.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a point at which they keep making all these changes and we all get kind of fed up with it. But in terms of, you know, how damaging it is, we haven't really seen enough time hasn't passed. They've done a lot of really big changes in the last, what, probably 3 weeks or so. So we'll probably need another month or so before we figure out if, you know, our sales getting impacted and things sure. like that. But from a branding aspect, I think it's something that if they're going to try to penetrate the esports market, they kind of need to change their branding up a little bit.
Yes.
I think Magic Fest is also a branding move. You know, Grand Prix doesn't really say anything about Magic. If I say nope. Grand Prix, you're not on. Well, you will.
It doesn't amaze. Right, but to a person that's trying to get into Magic, doesn't automatically like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And even though I think Magic Fest is really cheesy and corny,
sure.
I think that phrase change is not for me. I think it's for the new player who, you know,
absolutely.
Came to their first pre-release and now maybe they want to see what else is out there, and then they'll hear about Magic Fest and they'll think it's this, you know, like EDM weekend of fun and, you know, that's.
Well, I mean, you think about it. I don't know, man, the last GP I went to, I can't even remember how long it had to be. 10 years, but, or 8 years or something like that. But I remember going to GP New Jersey, you know, and there was maybe like 500 people at most. I mean, GPs have evolved. So like, yeah, Magic Fest is corny, but you mean you think about GPs now, I mean, there's like 1500, you know, there's a lot of people there now and it's more of like a gathering. That's extremely cheesy, but it's more of like, an event rather than, you know, it's almost like the side events and the just being there and to socialize and to do all this other stuff other than playing the game. I mean, that's what GPs has become. And they're more of these like big events rather than like, so I think they're trying to capitalize on that. Like,
and I agree with you on that. I think
like mini cons almost.
Yeah, I agree. I think GPs have evolved from a main event to a bunch of really small side events over the course of an entire weekend, and then maybe a side event if that's what you're interested in. But most of the new players, most of the casual players, they have no interest in the main event. They want to go play some EDH, they want to go do a draft or a sealed or something like that, and then maybe get some artist signatures and walk around and talk to their friends. The main event, I think, is lost on casual players, and I think something like Magic Fest ties it more to the side events than an actual main event tournament, which is really daunting. You tell a new player that they're about to play 15 rounds with a cut to top 8 with a bunch of pros. That's a big step for a lot of new players, and that they're going to get turned off to it because it's scary to them, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a good question to kind of take now. This is from Lockheed. Some local gaming store owners here have a feeling that Hasbro might be trying to actually get the MTG players to move away from paper Magic organically, playing a long game of devaluing boxes by allowing Amazon and other big box stores, as you kind of mentioned this arena, to direct sales boxes and hurt the local gaming stores and pushing harder for MTG Arena. I don't personally believe this sort of logic, but wondering if you have heard anything like this or feel there's any validity or tiny grain of salt of truth to it.
So I have heard some people discuss that. I mean, there's a lot of theories and speculation that I've been seeing. Some of it kind of resonates with me. Some of it just kind of seems outright crazy. I don't think they're trying to do that. I think if they can have people play paper Magic and online, they'll do that. I think they also understand that a person's wallet is only so large and they can only spend, you know, in certain avenues. So it's possible that they want people to gravitate more towards Arena, you know, as they continue with beta and get a kind of rough estimate of what their revenue stream is going to be like. Maybe that's a much more profitable direction to go for the company. We don't really know that yet. I don't think they would abandon paper Magic altogether. And I think they're going to try to get as much of players to get into everything rather than dropping one thing and putting the focus onto another thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. I think they are trying to kind of, I think consolidation is more of like a better kind of way to think of this, as they want like this vision of paper Magic, and then they also, you know, have their their IP going digital with MTG Arena. So like you said, I mean, it's still early to kind of see what exactly the damage is, if any, of this kind of Amazon partnership. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. Like, do you feel that, again, that their decisions to kind of help out, like, that are obvious of the buy a box promos, the early bird special outweigh, you know, even their decisions to make something like the Guilds of Ravnica Mythic Edition? Do you feel that they always need to kind of give you that sort of, you know, if you're going to do something like the Amazon thing, we'll give us the Mythic Edition stuff? Because I think it's been a while from the vault, and certainly it's been a while from products that were exclusively like, you know, in LGS's, like the Commander Arsenal.
Yeah, I do think the buy a box promo and early bird is important to kind of soften the blow for these really kind of swingy decisions that they're making. As far as Mythic Edition goes, I was kind of split on it. I mean, it's their company. They're allowed to try to min-max the profits if they want on these sort of specialty lines. Obviously, I would have loved to gotten an allocation of it, but I'm not going to sit here and bash them all day, you know, simply because I didn't get this product. I also don't get the San Diego Comic-Con promos, and, you know, I don't bash them for that. I just buy them on the secondary market, and I still end up making a bunch of money. So it's all the same to me.
Right, and it's not, you know, and again, like, I pointed out earlier that Magic players have very, very selective memory, and I don't know if you, I think this was, were you an actual brick and mortar when Commander Arsenal was out?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. No, not for Commander's Arsenal. I was a brick and mortar for all of the anthologies, both one and two.
And then like all the subsequent like Commander products, right? So it's like they're not selling, like, yes, they sell them at big box stores, the Commander stuff. They have moved away, you know, from just stocking them in local gaming stores. But I mean, I don't like that. It's always just seems like a lose-lose to me, right? So they were exclusively in local gaming stores. Folks couldn't, you know, bear the fact and got completely upset that we couldn't find like Mind Seas in any of the stores because the owners would take them and they wouldn't sell them or whatever. They would sell them to their friends. We can't find, you know, why don't you give more stores more exclusives? Well, okay, here's Commander's Arsenal. Oh my goodness, like WotC, what are you like? We can't find any of these. All the store owners are like price gouging, you know, all of the Commander Arsenals to like four times the MSRP. You know, they're charging like $400 for these. Like, we can't buy them all. Like, why do you only send them to these greedy, you know, local gaming stores? So I don't understand. I mean,
yeah, I saw your post earlier, and I think you're absolutely right. A perfect example is the Spellbook Jace. Those were $30 to $40 in my area at most stores. MSRP is $20. So, you know, it doesn't matter what the product is. If it's limited, stores are going to try to gouge on it. We've made a point to only sell at MSRP, and then the rest of it will open for singles. But that's largely because we want to kind of protect our image in that regard, because I feel like making $10 on a person now, but they have kind of a bad taste in their mouth after it, that is lost revenue over the rest of that year that they, you know, they would have come in and spent because they actually like our store. I think it is a lose-lose. I think Wizards just has to do what they think is right. I hope they just always focus on the numbers and kind of take customer feedback with a grain of salt, because, I mean, there's a lot of opinions out there, and it's always going to be negative, I think, at this point.
Absolutely. So I guess let's kind of, so, I mean, do you feel that your business is, I mean, how's business? I mean, did you have great numbers for your pre-release for Guilds?
Yeah. So we sold out of our pre-release. We unfortunately had to turn away, I think, about 40 to 50 people. So it was definitely the biggest pre-release that I know we've ever had. I know San Diego's ever had. There was some guy I saw, he had posted, he had six flights and they were all over 100 people. So that guy had over 600 kits, you know, for his pre-release. So I think the set is very healthy. I think Magic in general is fine. We haven't seen really any decrease in numbers. We saw, you know, summer slump, that's to be expected. And then we'll just be cruising right into winter time and then tax return time and then all over again. So until we see numbers change where we're actually making less money, then we'll start to get kind of concerned. But until then, I really don't think there's anything wrong with the health of Magic.
And is that so, I mean, you talked about boxes and then you kind of mentioned, you know, it is what it is on the boxes anyway. I mean, you're making like slim to none. You're not making like, that's not really where the kind of meat and potatoes are in terms of, you know, your profit. I mean, it's obviously singles. I mean, they still are, they, you know, you had a huge turnout from Dominaria from what I remember. You now had another huge turnout, Guilds of Ravnica. How does that end up, you know, helping you in the long term? I mean, are you making a lot on the actual pre-release itself, or do you just gain the extra cost over the year when these folks are coming? And I'm sure it was like you did not want to turn those folks away. I can understand that, because that is just, you know, that's a lot of people. And, you know, I'm sure for every pre-release, you don't want to send those people away, because over the course of the year, those are people that you gain as customers as they're coming in. They came in for their first pre-release or what have you. They liked your store. Is that kind of where the profit is, or do you make not a lot on even these pre-releases these days either?
The profit margins on pre-release are okay. After everything is said and done, we make about $7 per kit. So, you know, over the course of a weekend for us, you're looking at about $1,500, which is still small compared to the singles. It's just a nice burst. You get sales from other things. People are selling new cards. They're buying deck boxes, sleeves, drinks. So it ends up being decent. And then, of course, what you're also doing is you're fostering a community for the next 3 months where people say, I had a really great time playing pre-release of Brute Force Games. Let's go over there for F&M, or let's go sell them my collection now that I want to downsize, or let's go buy a deck over there. So, you know, we do a lot more long-term sort of profit building rather than short-term, you know, just kind of grab the cash and run. That's always been a model that I feel is more important. I'm looking for longevity, so.
I'm just going to take another question here. I think it's very pertinent as well. And LGS here has the philosophy that they will never sell those products, those kind of products at MSRP, because they don't feel good about selling the product to someone who's just going to turn around and make money off of it on eBay or what have you. They like to sell at MSRP or lower to regular customers who spend money in the store. To clarify, they put product on the shelf with the price tag, But if they check, but they check with regulars who might be interested in the product first to sell at MSRP. If they don't sell, they list higher for the random person that may walk in and want to buy it.
Yeah, I have heard of that. I believe there's one store locally that does that. I don't really have any proof, so I'm not going to say their name or anything. But from what I've heard is that, you know, if you're part of their, it's like a midnight club or whatever, they do like a lot of late night magic. You get like special prices on stuff, and that includes, you know, products like this. So I know that that definitely does happen. I don't agree with it. I mean, just like Mike said, you know, he has pretty strong words about that. And if he knew that there was a store locally that did that, he might not shop with them. And I feel like that's how most people will feel. So again, I feel like it does their store a disservice to do things like that. But I mean, it's their business. I don't really have a say in how they operate. So
I guess the overall question. And so before I move into that, did you happen to see Mark Rosewater's response to the Amazon deal, specifically on his blog?
I did. Yeah, I thought it was pretty well written. There were some people.
Do you think it's like lip service, or do you think that was, you know, mostly genuine?
I think it was a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Okay. I mean, there were people that were like, this is Watsy double speak, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I mean, he has to toe the line a little bit, right? But I think there is some truth in what he said. He just said it in a very nice way. I think if they were being, you know, if you take someone like yourself, or let's say that this happened in QS chat, where somebody was just constantly bombarding you with negativity or lies or something like that, your response may not be as eloquent as what Mark said, right? Like, you may take a more abrasive stance. So I think he has to toe that line of, you know, saying certain things, getting the point across, and he has to say it in a nice way where it almost seems like doublespeak. But I do believe that there's some genuine truth to what he said.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Like, you know, some of the nuance in, you know, I have to kind of stick to this way of answering thing, whether, you know, even, you know, I have to not toe the line too much, whether it's, whereas it's someone like you or I or what have you, that's not kind of tied to the, you know, corporate hip, where we can have the same answer, but it's not going to leave much room for, I guess, imagination and nuance, because we can be a little bit more, not totally abrasive, but, you know, a little bit, you know, tougher in our response. I don't think, like, you know, those kind of answers, you know, they are going to seem a little bit of, you know, cream puff kind of answers that you may feel like, oh, it's just more doublespeak. But I mean, he has, you know, Mark is kind of, you know, you have to answer those questions like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what people really expect. What do they want them to, like, curse and yell at you? Like, I mean, because that's the alternative, hyperbole, right? Like, yeah.
There's LGSs that I used to go to that had discount clubs that would give you a discount to buy at MSRP for $10 a month. I don't know, like, is that something that has ever been discussed, or is that something that you don't feel, you know, obviously I'm sure they could do that, but I don't know if that's against policy or anything like that.
No, it's not against policy. So WOTC doesn't have a map system in place, although people clamor for it all the time. I personally don't like map, but, you know, there's differing opinions. Loyalty programs are definitely something that we've considered doing here. I don't really like the fact that you have to pay money to get a product at MSRP, so we would probably do something different. But yeah, they're well within their right to do a discount club or a loyalty program and offer any sort of you know, discount or offerings with that. I think the biggest part of that is they just need to make it clear about what the discount club offers, as well as offer it to everybody. So my main problem with, you know, what I mentioned earlier with the store's midnight club or whatever, is that it's exclusivity based on, you know, the fact that that person comes in a lot or they spend the most money. So offer it to everybody or don't offer it. So,
yeah, I agree. Trying to take more questions here. Is there, you know, and I'm, it's so awesome. I'm glad that we got your kind of input on all this stuff so far. I'm glad you actually saw Mark's response to all this. And you know what, like, as always, I, you know, you have this kind of level-headed take, and I think everyone really appreciates that in our Discord, and me personally too. You know, I think folks, you know, just have this selective memory, right? I just think folks just like to get riled up. They like to kind of point the blame, and I totally get it. But I do think that it is in their best interest, and as and always has been, and like we always will be, to kind of harmoniously as they can have, you know, keep their business, you know, paper side, which includes local gaming stores. But again, I think people, they confuse that term with just like these stores that happen to be selling Magic cards. And they confuse that with those clubhouses that we've kind of talked about. You know, and it's at the end of the day, it's a local gaming store, right? And that's community. That's, you know, not just Magic. That's, you know, all those things, you know, you have a clean, safe environment, the lights are on, it's clean, you have a good staff, like all those things have to add up. And that's what you're taking on when you kind of go into that, that kind of arena, I guess, with other stores, right? I mean, down here, I mean, no, now that I'm, you know, I've been in Florida, I mean, Cool Stuff Inc. is just kind of like all over the place. And not that I may certainly like going to specific parts, you know, specific stores in that chain, I mean, at the end of the day, like, they have this vision of what a local gaming store is and where they want their product, but they also want it to harmoniously kind of go alongside their digital, you know, Magic Arena, whatever IPs they decide to, or whatever kind of genres of games they use for their IP. I mean, I think they want kind of like, I mean, Pokemon TCG, I mean, they've kind of had this business model for a very long time. I know you get, they were what, arena codes? Like, it's all just, to me, I mean, it feels like we've talked about this a lot, that I just kind of felt like if they were going to go this direction, it would be very, very similar to Pokemon TCG. And now it's almost kind of like confirming that for me.
Yeah, I do hope that they do an aspect of Pokemon TCG where you buy a pack in real life, you get a pack online. I actually really like that model. I don't know how it impacts the profitability side. I haven't done any research on that.
Sure.
It's just somebody told me about that the other day, and I was like, wow, that's great. That would be amazing. It would drive pack sales in store. It would kind of coalesce paper Magic and online, and you would probably see some growth in both sectors because people want to do both if they can buy one and get, you know, the same thing online. But moving back to your first point about the local gaming store and sort of the negative news that the customers or the people who play Magic in general, I feel like it's the LGS's job to kind of drive the narrative to a more positive one, right? So we have all this info being dumped on us. We have all these negative views of the situation from, you know, inflammatory YouTube videos and Facebook comments and Twitter and things like that. But we as LGS, we can drive that narrative back to, well, look, that's one opinion, but here's how I see it, you know, as a local game store. It's not going to affect me, so don't worry about us. The best thing you can do to combat this, if you're really worried about this, is to continue to spend in stores. So as long as you're going to an LGS, nothing's really going to change. The only thing that would change is if you get so angry at the company that you decide to quit the game and then you stop coming here, and then you basically have just done what you got so angry about. So,
right, now you're actually hurting us.
Yeah, now you're actually causing harm. So I think it's kind of strange to like quit the game and do all these things because, you know, somebody made a YouTube video and kind of spun a small problem into a bigger one.
And that happens, I mean, across YouTube and, you know, with the advent of social media and all that. I mean, it's easy to kind of just cherry pick negativity, but you know what? It's exactly right. I mean, when you, and this is exactly why we have the vendor series and we have, you know, store owners on, because we want to give the platform to drive that narrative of like, and have, well, not the narrative, but have your a store owner's take, right? Like, I'm not speaking for you. You're speaking for, you know, as a store owner that has a brick and mortar store that going on what, 5 years? I mean, so, and you've been in business and you kind of know the nuances of that. Like, instead of like trying to talk for you, why don't you know, you have these local gaming store owners on?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be great. And I wish more people would do that. I wish that there were maybe some more YouTube videos of personalities that would invite LGS owners on, and they can kind of get their opinion rather than just, you know, say what's on their mind and then just let it kind of unravel.
Sure.
I think if you have multiple people discussing a topic, you come to a sane conclusion more often than not. And that's why I love, you know, QS. And for the longest time, I didn't even know that there was a Discord. I was still using the forums for I don't know how long. And I was like, why are these forums so dead? And then, you know, I find out that there's a Discord that's been raging on. And so it's great to be able to have these kind of pockets of information and knowledge sharing. And, you know, I may have an opinion and then somebody counters it. And then I go, oh, wait, you know what? That actually makes a lot of sense. That makes more sense to me than my opinion 10 seconds ago. You know, I'm going to do some more research into that and kind of see if that's sort Absolutely. Of the opinion that I want to adopt going forward. So,
yeah. And, you know, like I said, I mean, you kicked off the vendor series, Tarkin and I, especially with our podcast. I mean, and it's definitely like we push it for insiders. Obviously, other folks, you know, out there listen. They go on to MTG Cast, you know, at some point. But we definitely like to push it for, you know, insiders, so everyone's informed. And you have this kind of you know your say. I'm not speaking for you. I mean, we have a lot of vendors on. We've had Card Kingdom on. We've had Channel Fireball on. We've had you on. I mean, we've had. Just so we try to get so many different local gaming stores. And when they're all saying the same thing, I mean, it's like, I don't, you know, if folks would have just take the extra time and kind of just, well, hear it from the horse's mouth kind of thing and hear it from local gaming stores. It's like, I'm not giving you, like, we're talking, like, I'm not telling you what to say. Like, if they're all saying the same thing, you know, why don't you just take their word for it? They've been doing this for X amount of time. I mean, that's why, you know, even as a player, you know, I would even know just from a player and just as a customer, like going into the X amount of stores, it's like, I can kind of see this store might not make it. And, you know, for X amount of years, like the same stores in my area would continue on and continue on. And even in some cases, like grow. So I don't understand sometimes.
Yeah, I think most stores are probably a lot healthier than people give them credit for. I think... It honestly depends on how competitive your area is, but
sure.
I think as long as you, you know, offer products at a decent price and you're kind to people and you offer events and you listen to feedback and you're not rude, I think you're going to do fine. I think there's a lot of stuff you have to do to kind of become excellent or become a giant, like a Cool Stuff or a Card Kingdom. That's a whole, you know, step up. But if your goal is to just run an LGS, pay your bills, and, you know, go to work and be happy, it's really easy. There's not a whole lot you have to do.
Really?
Well, sorry, excuse me. There's a lot of stuff you have to
do. Well, sure, but...
From a, like, starting standpoint, as long as you're going to offer decent prices, you're going to be kind to people, you're going to give to the community and, you know, kind of... allow them to give back to you and not be rude to them when they can't. I think you'll do just fine. Now you need to know all the other stuff. You need to know about, you know, tax codes and how to run a business and what a profit and loss sheet are and how to get collections and manage your finances. But aside from all that, I think the kind of core mission or mission statement, so to speak, should be somewhere around there and you'll do just fine.
Now this is an assumption and I don't want to kind of trying to be in someone else's head, but would you, I guess, from your perspective, would you say that then, you know, I guess the negativity from the store owner's perspective of, you know, and you mentioned earlier in the cast that you can maybe see some store owners may not want to kind of deal with that, but they, you know, may not be primarily Magic or what have you. But would you feel that then, you know, some of that negativity and just kind of using these announcements and just kind of their mind frame, would you just kind of feel like, because I guess it's to me, it just feels like they were kind of wanting to get out of this for a long time. And they're just kind of trying to find the next, I guess, excuse to pack up and go home kind of thing.
Are you saying why the LGS stores would want to abandon Magic?
Well, sure. I mean, it's some of the like, well, you know, this Amazon, you know, we can't continue our LGS the way it is and what have you. We can't, you know, just kind of maybe that kind of, you know, standpoint. Has that been maybe something, you know, you feel that they've been considering for a long time, or the, and they're just using the next example just to, or the next announcement to just kind of say, you know, I'm done with this, you know, F it.
I do. Yeah. Most of the examples that I've seen in the comments from people is they make the statement that they've either want to get out of Magic, or they have been moving away for from it for the last, you know, X months. And then they cite, you know, a bunch of other games that are very profitable and do well for them. But almost always when I check their website or check their store, they're not a store that really does singles. So they only do booster packs. They only do
sure.
singles. So
yeah.
I get it from that perspective. I get it from the smaller stores who only sell boxes, and maybe they do get a lot of, will you match this on Amazon? And maybe they don't handle that question very well. Maybe they get really offended. That question does not offend me at all. And, you know, depending on how they handle that question depends on whether or not they get a sale. I can shift that narrative. If you're going to ask me for a price match on Amazon, I will shift it to where you will be comfortable spending an extra $15 and you will buy a box from me. So, but other people may not want to put the work into it. Maybe they just want to put up, you know, Games Workshop stuff and 40 Hammer, and they just want it to fly off the shelves, and that's fine. But I think if you're going to be a Magic centered store, you kind of have to do singles. So
awesome. I don't want to take, you've given me so much time, and it's awesome. We're going to take, you know, a couple quick questions. Is there anything that you really wanted to bring up, Sean, or, you know, that maybe we have missed, or a kind of point on all, you know, some of the stuff that we talked about that is really important to get out there?
I think we covered most of the topics. The only thing that I didn't really bring up, because I don't think it came up, is the only fear that I have regarding sure. the shift to Amazon and the closure of direct sales is whether or not product availability will be consistent throughout the entire, you know, 3 months that a set is available. And I know I've brought this up in QS chat.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
Dominaria had about a 3 to 4 week period where all of my distros are out. And I had guaranteed product from Wizards Direct. So I was able to continue my drafts, you know, having packs on the shelves. If we don't see that consistency and drafts stop firing here, that is a major problem. So, and that is something that people aren't really discussing, which I think is strange, because of all the things being discussed, I think that is probably the most dangerous to an LGS. Because if a store goes 3 to 4 weeks without a draft, people are going to start not coming. Oh,
yeah.
Period.
Yeah. And well, it's compounded by if drafts aren't firing, then you're not even like, you're not even getting any, like, and any of the new product, which means it's harder to even stock singles.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah,
if which is even more important because if you have folks coming to compete and you don't have the singles, I mean, not having a draft fire is one thing, but you're not getting that steady stream of singles because there's no steady influx of, you know, if all your distros are out and you're not having the product, which means other LGSs are running into the same issues. I mean, if you don't have those singles, I mean, it's a problem, big problem.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, normally we pretty, even with a shortage, we have a pretty good influx
oh, okay, good.
Of singles coming in because we buy from, you know, local community. We're sure. pretty much one of the only buyers locally. And then we also do a lot of buying outside the state as well. So okay. that the single side, I mean, sure, it can definitely cause an issue. But yeah, I think it more so than that, if people aren't coming to your drafts, they're not selling you singles, right? Because they're not here yeah. to actually sell them. So you definitely get affected that way. So I see two questions here, one from Mike and one from Morph Willbender. Is it cool if I answer those real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So Mike asked if we've seen anything from guilds now that it's been released, if people are brewing and any cards rising to the top. So I had mentioned it before. We sold out of like History of Benalia, Clifftop Retreats. That was a few weeks ago. So I think that's where a lot of the brewing lied originally. Now we're actually, our wish list for product, our number one is the Nullback, the 6/6 for four.
Nullhide Ferox?
Yeah, that's our most wish listed card.
Wow.
I'm still trying to learn the name, so bear with me if I sound like
it's okay. I think we all are.
Yeah, so and it went up just a little bit. I saw on Channel Fireball. So I don't know. That could potentially be a sleeper. I mean, I like the card. I think it's fine, but I think at its, you know, $8 or $10 price mark, that's might be as high as it's going to go. I really liked Pelt Collector. I was with everybody on that one, and that one's already popped. Yep. So that's pretty much it for my specs from the set. An experimental frenzy, but that's more of a bunch of friends who are much better at the game than I. They told me that card's been testing really well. So,
yeah, it definitely seems like a lot of the guild stuff is already kind of on the rise. But yeah, we're definitely keeping an eye on the Ferox. I've seen that as well, and they're normally played as like a solid four of, but they normally are kind of confined to like that mono green strategy. Some of them are splashing black now, but we saw those in the last couple of MTGO results, so it could definitely pick up some speed. And it's even kind of a decent like mid-range threat as well.
Yeah, I definitely like the card. I'm also a big green player, so I'm with you there, Chaz. I've been playing Combo Elves and Legacy since like 2010. So.
Nice. Always love a Scream Mages. But yeah, I think you actually kind of even mentioned it there that I don't know what the ceiling is on that. It can't be that high. I think Pelt Collector's a little more, it has more applications, a little more ubiquitous. So that's kind of why you see that higher price tag. But yeah, we definitely kind of identified that early, especially you, as well as everybody else. We were kind of all in on that.
Yeah, so
there's not really much more meat on the bone there.
And then
I think you're kind of, you were telling us, especially what was selling, like that History Benalia that was on the move from even then. So we talked about it even a few days ago, I talked about it a few days ago on a cast, and yeah, that thing just kind of moved up quick.
Yeah, it really did. Resplendent Angel, I actually missed. That wasn't even on my radar, so I completely missed that one. I guess you had called that in a previous cast.
Yeah, well, I was just, it's from Core 19. I don't know, like, was that kind of a dip, especially like from your end on a store end? Because I know like Dominaria was like record breaking. Was it kind of like a dip for Core 19? Because then we had, was it Battle Bond and then Core 19? It was Battle Bond then Core 19, right?
Yeah, so Battle Bond sold extremely well, and then Core 19 was kind of medium. The boxes sold really well because we had obviously Nexus Fate,
right?
But other than that, the set was pretty flat. So pre-release, I don't even think we sold out.
Wow.
A lot of the Core Set stuff actually may see a rise just because who really wants to open Core Set right now?
Exactly. So that's kind of why I prioritized Resplendent Angel a little bit higher. When I was going through and seeing, well, all this stuff is actually seeing play. Resplendent Angel seeing play as like a 3 and 4 of. It's from Core 19 and it's a mythic. So that's pretty high up there in terms of, priority. So that's just kind of what I mentioned on that cast.
Yeah. And then so it looks like Morph Fieldbender had a quick question. So he was wondering how I changed the narrative. Were you talking about with the Amazon? So if somebody comes in and price matches for Amazon? Or for the negativity.
With the boxes.
Oh yeah. So if somebody comes in and they want a price match on anything, I normally just say something along the lines of, I appreciate you trying to price match. I definitely like to save money too. We unfortunately don't have the same margins as Amazon, so we can't price match. However, supporting your LGS definitely keeps us in business. And we would still really appreciate it if there's anything that you can do to maybe pay that little bit extra to get a box from us. And then, we can say something like, we still have buy a box promos. We'd be happy to give you one of those. Or if it's prior to pre-release, we could say, you're going to get it a full week early. You don't have to worry about it getting shipped to you or stolen off your doorstep. We'll have it here. All you got to do is waltz in and we'll just hand it to you and you're ready to go and you can start opening your packs.
One more quick question. This is from Theater. I don't know if you can maybe have a condensed story. I don't know how long the story is, but the kind of transition from online to brick and mortar and what your experience was that was. I don't know if it's another entirely new podcast episode, but.
No, I don't think it's that long. I'll try to summarize it. So.
Yeah, sure.
We jumped small. So what I did was when I was doing this out of my house for a number of years, and then I got to the point where I kind of wanted some separation. I wanted work-life balance. So I got just a small office space thinking, oh, well, if I have an office space, I could still do my online stuff. You know, staff can still file list and, you know, do shipments and things like that. But what we found out is that people really liked what we were doing. They liked our prices, they liked our buy prices, and they liked us. So we noticed the second that we moved into an office, people were a lot more comfortable to come by and want to pick up stuff locally. So then people started saying, you know, when are you going to open a store? When are you going to open a store that we can play at? So then, you know, 2 years went by, my lease came up, and then I was like, well, you know what? Why don't I just try to find a place where any amount of overhead that I get can be supplemented by our online revenue, meaning if nobody comes into play, if this is a complete flop, we don't suffer as a business. So I found a pretty cheap place. It held about 30, 40 people. And then within like 6 months, we were like packed, almost every F&M. People started coming by a lot. We started really fostering the community. We started really focusing on that and realizing how important it was. And then now we've moved to, you know, a larger space. And yeah, same thing. We're full every night. During the week, it's pretty slow. But I would say the transition is pretty easy if you already have all of the business stuff set up, meaning you have like the tax forms all done and you have, you know, reseller's permit and whatever your state requires. If you have all that, then the main difference is signing a lease and then signing up contracts with distributors, which is kind of a process, but I mean, it's really easy. It's also just filling out questions and signing a piece of paper.
Yep. If there's no more questions, Sean, I mean, the amount of time you've given us has been amazing. More importantly, like where can they find you? Your store, by all means, plug it. You know, we want to be able to give you that, to be able to, you know, have folks come and do business.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks. So anybody in the San Diego or the surrounding area, feel free to visit us. We have, you know, tournaments for all formats going on throughout the week. We have online, both sales and buy list available at bruteforcemtg.com. We can also be found on eBay and TCG Player for when you get those sweet coupons, you can go visit our store and utilize those discounts. I don't care whether you buy from us on TCG Player, eBay, or direct. Just happy to get the sales when they come in.
Awesome. Sean, thanks so much for providing your insight. It has been amazing. This will be up for everyone to listen to very shortly. Happy to do this again anytime.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Feel free to always invite me back on the cast if you have any questions that you need kind of a store's input on. Happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks. Yep. A very awesome, level-headed store owner and take. Do business with Sean. He's great. And that's going to wrap it up for this cast, folks. So this pretty much kicks off like a vendor series, actually. So this has been amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you have any other vendors lined up? Because this that'll be so, fun for me.
Yeah. So Tark actually told me we have Card Kingdom and Channel Fireball set up again. So we'll be here.
Oh man, those are going to be good. Do you have John specifically for CFB?
I don't know if we have John. I don't know if we've confirmed that yet, but we have someone.
Very cool.
At this point, cool. Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be awesome. Great either way.
Yeah, we really tried to get as much as we could out of CFB, but this was like really before the whole them kind of taking over GPs, but I felt that they were really transparent with us and we tried to get as much as we could, and not in terms of like corporate speak, but I thought they were really forthcoming with us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure as long as it's not proprietary, they'll give you whatever information.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much. We'll definitely do this again. And thanks, everyone, for joining us.
All right. Thanks again, guys. Bye.
Yep. Take care.